Hello and welcome back. It's episode 74 of Campbell Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today's conversation, we are talking about the power of reading with Ed Cunningham of A Need to Read. Expect to learn in this podcast about Ed's passion for reading and what's driven him to share this passion with the internet via his podcast and his Instagram. Ed comes across as genuinely caring a tremendous amount about this topic, and it was a pleasure to have this conversation. I ask Ed how we can make a habit of reading and what behavior change fundamentals we can use to read faster, take in more of what we're reading, and generally action more of what we're spending time reading. Expect to understand more about Ed's opinion on fiction versus non-fiction, three books we would read for peak performance, and how you should encourage those around you who don't enjoy reading quite yet and how you might be able to do that. Lastly, Ed shares his self-improvement that he's experienced through therapy and the power of story. We also dive into his advocacy and his experience of therapy, and it's a very candid conversation for which I'm very grateful for Ed's honesty. If you want to support today's podcast, you can shop with Factory Weights. Factory Weights are a premium gym equipment brand where you can get a range of kettlebells, dumbbells, barbells, plates to support your home training or your gym or wherever you choose to do some exercise. You can get high quality, affordable fitness equipment that is heavy on quality but light on price at factoryweights.co.uk. That'll be linked in the show notes below. Next day delivery is just £3, which if you've bought any equipment in the last 18 months after the lockdowns, you will know that is incredible value. And to make an even further saving on top of that, you can shop with Call10 to get a further 10% off. Before we dive into this episode, I want to say thank you for your continued support of the podcast. We are growing at a rate of knots, reaching new people and having a positive impact as people look to become their best selves. This conversation is just another one on the way to doing that. And I personally took a lot from Ed's advice around behavior fundamentals that can drive us to read more, but also some of the different topics and books that we can read. And I've already ordered some of Ed's recommendations via Amazon, and I suspect you will too. Without any further ado, let's get into this one with Ed Cunningham. Hello and welcome back. It's another episode of Cambro Conversations. And today's conversation is one that you're all going to love, but equally from a selfish perspective, I'm excited for as well. I'm joined by Ed Cunningham of A Need to Read. Ed, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited for this one, especially because I get to hear your beautiful Scottish accent for the whole time.
Yes, and we won't tell the listeners about your style of Scottish impressions. It's pretty accurate, but we won't do it on the podcast, I promise, guys. But I stumbled across Ed's content probably about a month ago, and straight away I was just binging listening to the podcast as well as making a podcast. I love to listen to them, as I think many of us do, Ed, from a kind of a selfish self-development point of view. And for me, I was thinking, I like reading, but this guy is doing it on a level that's well beyond what I'm up to, but also you're talking about how to read more, how to make more of what you're reading. So it's not just a case of, sometimes we get these kind of dick measuring competitions where people are like, I read 60 books a year. You should be too if you want to actualize and get to my level. Whereas you're stripping that back to a much better, more actionable message, in my opinion.
Oh, thank you very much, mate. Yeah, I think it's no good me going out there and saying to people, oh, I fucking read 50, 60 books a year. You should be doing it too. Your life could be sick. Because like, my life's all right. It's not that sick. I'm not like CEO of Spotify or anything. But on that subject, CEO of Spotify does read 70 books a year. There is definitely something useful about books. And I think obviously the reason that I started the podcast is to spread the message that like these things are like 5, 6, 7, 8 quid. Spend a few hours on it and you could learn something that will drastically improve your life forever.
I really like that message, and many of us will happily invest in certain things but not invest in others. And some people might grumble at their Audible subscription or their £5, £6, £7 whatever it is off Amazon to buy a self-development book or any other kind of book, which I'm sure we'll get onto as the episode goes. But I have this phrase, Ed, and I'm going to overuse it probably in this podcast as well, low-hanging fruit. So that's that easily in reach, beneficial thing that we could maybe change about our lives. And one of those, from what I've read of your stuff and what I've listened to of your stuff, is reading. Why would you say that's such a big benefit for somebody like yourself?
What, in terms of the benefits I get from reading?
Yeah.
It allows me time on my own, which I absolutely love and live for, is time to just sit and not have anyone around me, which is great. Because contrary to sort of how I come across on social media, I'm pretty introverted. I get my energy from being on my own. And say you read a novel, you can vividly hallucinate this whole story in your head whilst you're on your own. And reading personal development, there is literally a genre for anything you want to do in life when it comes to books. And I just stumbled across it a couple of years ago. I wasn't a big reader in school. It's not like I'm coming from like an English literature degree or anything like that. I dropped out of A-levels. I found out, I was like, this is so readily available. Why is no one talking about this? Why are people not trying to force you to read beyond school, basically?
I think so many of us get a little bit of an aversion to reading because we associate it with prepping for an English A-level or an English higher exam. Mm. I know that from doing a politics degree at uni, I fell away from reading big time because I used to read a lot of fiction as a kind of early secondary school. Obviously loved Harry Potter and all that kind of stuff, read other fictional books. But then I started to associate reading with wading through Aristotle and Marx and Locke. Don't get me wrong, now I would actually probably value that more because I'm not going to sit an exam on them. But at the time, I almost had an aversion to, I don't want to read before bed, or I don't want to read this book for pleasure, because I read during the day for function, so to speak, in terms of like ticking a box to be able to make some references within an essay rather than anything else. So it's funny how you were never an avid reader, but now you've almost rediscovered the beauty of it.
Yeah, definitely. And like you say about, I'd maybe read Aristotle or Marx or anything now. It's like, I actually don't really have that much of an interest in stuff like that. And I know they say like, oh, return to the classic texts if you want to learn the good things. But I'm like, I always say this, and it may be wrong, and people that love classics will hate the fact that I'm saying this, but like, I don't drive a car that was made in 1910 that was revolutionary back then. Like, my car was made in like 2020 because technology's better. It's safer. Someone crashed into me, I'm going to have airbags. These classic texts, some of them are great, but some of them are just like, they were the first ones to do it. And now there are people that obviously do it better because that's how like the human race has done it. We just get better and better over time.
The evolution of writing and content creation. Hopefully you and I look back at our early podcasts that we've done and think, well, I'm better at that now because we've evolved, same way that maybe some of the books that come out nowadays will obviously be a lot more meaningful or maybe more pertinent to the lives that we live at this stage as well. Would you say that's one of the problems with the school system then? Why you maybe didn't unearth this passion for reading at a younger age, because you maybe were forced to read classics?
Yeah, not necessarily like classics, but I just can't be told to do anything. And I don't like structure. I don't really like rules, things like that. It's not for me, which I used to think made me a bit of a bellend, but now I've kind of realized that's what makes me who I am. And if people want to perceive that as a bellend, that's okay. You know, it's got me this far and hopefully it will get me a lot further. But I just was a rebel without a cause in school. So I didn't like to read. I didn't like doing homework. I hated it. So I'd prefer to watch the film and then just try and wing the essays as much as I could. So like Tess of the D'Urbervilles, with Lenny and George, I can't even remember the name of it, of Mice and Men. Like, yep. Just watch the film. They're like, oh, how did they display this characteristic? I'm like, well, the actor did a great job of this. Like, I hated it. I hated being told what to do.
But now you find this love for reading and you're channeling it so well by trying to bring other people along with you on that journey. Equally, you've said there you don't like structure and rules, but I know that you've been heavily influenced by a book that I'm a huge fan of, and that's Atomic Habits. And I guess one of my first questions that I was thinking about asking you, Ed, was about how do we develop a better habit of reading? Because so many of us are so busy and it sometimes ends up in the back burner.
Yeah, well, like obviously you've probably spoken about Atomic Habits on this podcast before, but habit stacking is the single best way that anyone can build a solid like habitual reading habit. If you're and work to your strengths, right? If you're a morning person or an evening person, like night owl, morning lark, whatever they call it. Use that to your strengths. If you can't get up in the morning and you really struggle, there's no point fighting that too much and getting up and trying to read and half falling asleep if you operate better at night times. So I always stack things with cleaning my teeth. So like you don't want to not clean your teeth, right? Because you've got the fact that you would have to be able to taste your bad breath, which is never good. And then you've got the added bit of like pressure that imagine you're speaking to someone and you're the guy with bad breath. So if like for me, I started reading like in the mornings because I can get up early, absolutely fine. I'm like, right, well, before I go and have a shower and clean my teeth, I have to read 15 pages or I'll read in like for 15 minutes. Same with the evening, like when I started building like a reading a novel habit in the evening, I was like, right, well, before I actually get under the covers, I'll do 15 minutes of reading a novel. And you design your environment like in Atomic Habits to just make things seamless in that process. So when I go to bed, like I've packed my books, so I'm going away today, but like I would have one on my pillow. So I'm like, oh yeah, I remember you. I was meant to read you today. And it's just about making your life easier, yeah. I think.
Straight away, I can see the actionable takeaways that you've had from that book. And there will be some people like, oh, leaving a bed in your pillow, that's so silly. Like, why would you have to do that? But then you're the one that's laughing who's built a reading habit when you read every single night before you get under the covers, because it's sitting there and it's that convenience, removing the friction of maybe it's in your bedside drawer and you would have to get it out. And out of sight, out of mind is a big, big thing for us, particularly when there's so many other alluring, attention-grabbing things that we spend our time doing. And I was shaking with laughter. I don't often do this in Instagram story, but when you put up that, I think it was a meme of the kind of the priest being tempted by the
girl with her arse out.
Yeah, promiscuous lady, we'll use the term. Yeah, girl with her arse out will do me as well. And it's like that was like Instagram stories or instant gratification from social media versus the maybe more noble, more long-term serotonin release of reading. How do you overcome that, Ed? Is that something that you face a battle against as well?
Yeah, every day, man. Like there's always stuff that I want to see. Like it's my job now. Like I do Instagram stories for a job. I want to see how they've performed. I want to see statistics. I want to see stuff like that. And I want to see that as soon as I wake up. I don't stop thinking about a need to read, healthy or unhealthy. Like it's my child now. So I do have to fight it. And I leave my phone either on the other side of my room or outside of my room just to make sure that's not a problem. And I got myself just a £6 Casio alarm clock, because a lot of people have their phone, the alarm goes off, they just say or dismiss, and then all of a sudden there's a WhatsApp message. Maybe that's a WhatsApp message from their like partner who's been out that night and they're sending them something at 3 a.m. That's instant anxiety. There's so many different ways in which your phone is going to wake you up in the wrong way. Getting out of your bedroom is like the single best thing you can do. And then after a while, you can kind of control that. So I like to leave it over the other side of my room. And I pretty much have my phone on like bedroom mode, yeah, all day. So I don't get any notifications, because I'm so easily distracted. I have to have that kind of discipline to, well, it's not even discipline, it's just using my phone to my advantage, right? Just no one's going to disturb me. If someone calls me and it's important, like I've never been called in an emergency. No one's ever wanted me to go to Paris and save them like Liam Neeson. Like I used to think that if I didn't have my phone on, something dreadful would happen and I wouldn't be able to go and kill my sister's kidnappers or something like that. And then you realize that this, it just doesn't happen that way. You don't need to be reachable all the time. So essentially get your phone out of your room. No one cares about you that much in the night.
You're really speaking my language here, Ed. And I think you might be connected with Chris Williamson as well. I'm sure he would be a great guest on your podcast in the future as well. He hosts Modern Wisdom. He's been on this show. He was the launch episode for Canberra Conversations. Absolutely phenomenal, nice guy. And he was one of the first people that was saying about like one of the biggest kind of low hanging fruit competitive advantage you can give yourself is don't let your phone rule your day from the very start. So you're nailing it there with the alarm clock, phone out the room. Of course, it's going to be much easier to have a read of your book for 15 pages when that is the immediate option before you brush your teeth, rather than, as you say, Instagram stories or checking what the lads have posted in the WhatsApp group or messaging your partner, that is immediately gratifying and immediately seductive because of the technology within these phones. So straight away, you're building your environment and controlling that, enabling you to stick to this habit, which has a lot more reward for you in the short and the medium term.
Yeah, definitely. And it's my job now, isn't it? Like, so for me, I work as soon as I get up. I have to read the book to be able to gain that knowledge, to be able to just spit that at people over the internet. It's interesting you said about WhatsApp groups. Yeah, I made a decision last year just to leave all WhatsApp groups. I was like, it doesn't serve me. As much as a lot of people do need that human connection through a WhatsApp group and stuff like that, I made a decision that I would just leave all the WhatsApp groups because I found they were just causing me a little bit more stress than joy.
Returning.
And waking up to loads of... Yeah, exactly. So I was just like, nah, I'm out. Like, I'll have the odd one every now and then that's like for a specific date and then I just leave it straight after.
Yeah, I really like that. I'm a notifications off for all groups because anyone that's talking in the group, it could be a conversation between two people and you're just an observer within that. So I certainly think one step further in order to kind of regain your attention. And I know you're probably a Naya Rial fan as well. Can be a big, big thing. I really enjoyed his book, Indistractable. And when it came to kind of managing my attention and where my energy all goes towards.
Yeah.
Are there any other areas of kind of behavior change that you've looked at in order to allow you to read more Ed? I think the phone one is something that everyone listening to this will be guilty of. And there's definitely days where it slides for me as well. Like maybe on a weekend on a Sunday, I've got in later in the Saturday night and I've not put my phone outside my room and I've not set another alarm. And I'm like, right, okay, my reading habit's going to slip here.
Oh, yeah. And look, I'm not some dork who sits inside and does perfect things every single day. Like I'm very casual about what I do. If I miss a day, I don't get upset. I'll just go again the next day. Like it's in James Clear, like Atomic Habits, never miss twice. That was such a big thing for me. And I read A Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. And in the foreword of that, he'd been heavily criticized for inspiring Hitler through his novel back in the day. And there was a brilliant part about it's like when just basically rolling in the muck is not the best way of getting clean. And what that essentially means is if you're dirty, having a little fidget and then being annoyed at yourself whilst you're still in the place that you got dirty is going to serve you no purpose at all. So if you just get yourself up, dust yourself off, move on, that's how you get clean. That's how you stop doing these things. So if I ever do anything wrong, I go very easy on myself because if not, I'll just get depressed and I don't like being depressed.
No, I don't think any of us like being depressed. That's such a refreshing approach to overcoming those days where things don't go perfectly for us. And again, we're going to harp back to James Clear there where it's about what we do compounding over the longer period rather than one day's perfect effort or one day's poor effort. And for you to say like, yeah, maybe the day where you read half the number of pages you normally do, or maybe a quarter, even less.
Even that's none. Fine. Like I'll have days where I read none. People get so shocked at that. And I'm like, look, I try every day. But the good thing is for me is I've taught myself to enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Big, big fan of that. One of the things I've heard you speak about before, and it really helped me, was how to read faster. And that attracted me as somebody, and like many of the listeners, who feels that they're quite time limited, they have to fit a lot of stuff in. How do we as busy individuals read faster, Ed?
So look, I don't advocate fast reading at all. I'm like, reading is a good opportunity for especially people who consider themselves to be like super busy to slow down a little bit and give your brain that time to slow down. But if it's absolutely necessary for you to read fast, it is quite as simple as tracking with your finger. And there's different methods to speed reading. You can take off like an inch of the sentence on each side and you just read the middle and your brain will fill in the gaps for you and you just scan it. The best way to do it is to get rid of the voice in your head, but that's so difficult to do. So that like sub-vocalization, when you're reading in your mind, you're going, the cat sat on the mat. There is a way of reading that's just like, is it in your brain? Because your brain scans it, it's still going in, It's just you're not being a narrator in your head. I found when I tried like speed reading tests, whilst tracking with my finger was probably the best thing for me. I couldn't get rid of the sub-vocalization. So I think I was at like 240 words per minute if I just read normally. And I was probably like pushing the pace a little bit with my eyes and really trying. When I used my finger, it went up to about 600.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing that in school you'd have been mocked for. Oh, he has to use his finger to track the words.
I know.
But then look at the effectiveness of it, kind of 3x returns on doing that. And yeah, if you are, like you say, and you've done the kind of parenthesis there around super busy, I think all of us sometimes overestimate how busy we really are if we cut out some of the procrastination. Using your finger to track that means that you're going to absorb and take in more of what you're reading as well. I believe you were saying there's a better retention rate if we're using our finger as well.
Yeah, because you're imagine it like you're setting your sights on something. It's like you've gone laser focus because your attention is on the end of that finger. Whatever word is there, that's what you're focused on. If you're reading just normally, you can be focused on a word, but your peripherals are still kind of like popping off with stuff that might excite you, probably isn't even exciting, but your brain's like, oh, this is boring, looking over to the left. Like, so using your finger, it's literally just like a target. Just aim.
Speaking of other ways to be distracted, do you have a particular environment you prefer to read in? Is it your bedroom? Is it a chair in the lounge? Where's best to read?
I've got a chair in my room that looks like it's come from an old people's home. It's got terrible decor on it. And when that's not covered in my ironing, that is where I read in the morning. But I've like you can see behind me, I've got the pregnancy pillow, got a weighted blanket. Like, my bed's a pretty good place to read.
Yeah, that tends to be the place that you favor. So I don't read in the morning. I do my gratitude journal in the morning. Again, that was a new habit that 2 years ago, if you said to Colin that I'd be writing these three things I'm grateful for in the morning, I'd been like, what are you talking about? Man up, mate. What are you chatting
about? Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
But I think we all develop at different stages, and I think more young guys like you and I speaking about these things can help to move that dial. But equally, I certainly read in bed at night before I go to sleep. And I was saying to you before we hit record that I've maybe got a little bit of a bias, and I've come from a bias of everything that I read should be like business focused or self-development focused. So either to help me in my career, which is in sales and business development, so I can close bigger deals and be better with prospects and present better in meetings, or it should be focused on self-development, so I'm more actualized and I'm able to understand myself better. But you're obviously an advocate of reading both fiction and non-fiction as well as these kind of self-development texts.
Yeah, I think for me, I've always kind of resented work. Like, my issues with authority made me just not like it. And when I first started reading, I was reading just like Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Way of the Wolf by Jordan Belfort, like all of these like sales books, because I was like, oh, I'm going to be the best salesman. And I then realized, I was like, oh, you can apply these principles and read these books about your actual life and like your personality and stuff like that, and getting to understand yourself. So for me, reading a novel, firstly, it gives you perspective, right? I will never understand what it's like to live the life of a woman. I'll never understand what it's like to live the life of a six-year-old girl whose dad's a lawyer, who's representing a black guy in a rape case in Southern Texas in the 1920s. But if you read something like To Kill a Mockingbird, you can step into that person's shoes and understand that life, and you go through the emotional journey with them and you learn the lessons along the way. And you'll remember far more of what you read in a storybook than you ever will when you're reading self-development books. Because as human beings, we attach to stories. We're emotive beings. Like, whether we like it or not, it's easy to try and pretend sometimes we're a bit robotic, but we love emotion. And reading a story, living the life, feeling the emotions, like the way people write is stunning. And I hate it when I talk about the way people write. I think I sound a bit odd, because that's not the way I like to review things. But it is amazing how involved you can become in a story, an emotion. Like, you can feel anxiety, you can feel like joy, you can laugh, you can cry. And it's not your life. You get to shut the book and put it down, but you get to learn the lessons.
Do you know, I was wrapped in the way that you spoke about that. And I know you're saying there, like, oh, sometimes when I talk about how people like how authors bring this to me, it sounds a bit cringe or a bit off. I could feel the passion there. And I think that's why I quite like listening to podcasts or having guests on like yourself who have a genuine love for what they spend their time doing, because you were able to articulate that there with genuine passion. And it wasn't a case of trying to sound super clever, which I think some people try and sometimes do. You were just speaking there from the heart. And like, sometimes I read this book and I jump into this story, To Kill a Mockingbird, for example, as you've given there. And it just takes me to this other world, back to the 1920s, as you said, in a time when race was, I mean, even more challenged than it is nowadays, which I know we still have our challenges. And that is amazing that you utilize fiction from that perspective. And it certainly maybe makes me think that I need to utilize more fiction within my reading setup. Do you have like a recommendation for somebody like me or like the listeners who maybe have a bias towards self-development books, who maybe need to or want to dabble a little bit more in fiction?
Yeah, I would say like the best one for people to go for is Midnight Library by Matt Haig. And it just captures regret in a beautiful way. But I would say for yourself, it's a long one. It's like 600 and something pages. And it will be purely for the nostalgia. You won't learn much from this book, but I want you to learn to love reading, right? Skippy dies. I cried, I laughed, and like I just felt like I was a 14-year-old boy again. And you recognize the mistakes that 14-year-old boys make. You're like, oh my God, I did stuff like that. That's the way that I thought. How backwards is that? And it's insane. So it's by this guy, Paul Murray, an Irish writer. And it's so good. So I would say Midnight Library, just for general, but like if you were ever a teenage boy at any point in your life, then Skippy Dies is 100% the book to get into.
Yeah, and that's our kind of transition from being a super strict. I read, like you say, The Way of the Wolf. I read 12 Rules for Life and I read Atomic Habits, which are all great books from what I've taken from them. However, if I do want to maybe unlock that other side of reading where I can maybe use it for escapism beyond what I would maybe use Netflix or Amazon Prime for, then this is maybe a more fulfilling alternative to that.
Yeah, the sense of calm that you get into a flow state when you read a novel, and obviously getting into a flow state and whatever you do is good for your mental health. And I think any sort of string to your bow that you can add is brilliant in that sense. And you've probably heard of Naval Ravikant, and he says read what you love until you love to read. So like for you, like your vested interest at the moment is in this self-development stuff. And that's great because this is serving you. When you're like, when you learn to actually love to just sit down and read a book and just forget about what's going on around you, you might read a book that's 300 pages and there's two pages in there. There'll be an example of behavior in a novel that you're like, I really attached to that. Or I'd really like to behave like that when that situation comes up for me next time. So the other 298 pages people might see as a waste, but what you've done is you've just got to like boost your creativity, use your imagination. You like the characters look different for you than they look for me. And you get to create this whole world in your head. And it's like, it just settles your brain a bit. Like I can sit and meditate for an hour and it's difficult to do, but like I will get the same sort of sense of calm after reading for like 45 minutes of a novel, unless it's like a thriller or something. And can't really put it down, then I will after meditating for an hour.
Yeah, again, it's that in this modern age that we live in with smartphones and email and push notifications, the ability to, like you say, find calm. And meditation is another one where you're kind of, it's difficult to get people into it, but they start to see the benefits. But if people can achieve a meditative return from reading, then even better. Because we can get you into that easier. And you've given me kind of self-advice there about getting into fiction. I think that's been very valuable. What about people that just don't like to read at all, Ed? Because I've seen you be asked that on your story sometimes, like, how do I get my boyfriend to read? How do I get my friend to read? How do I get my son to read? How would you get somebody into reading who's just quite simply been like, hated it at school, mate, not interested?
I think it's a very, very difficult thing to do. And you can never tell anyone to do anything that they are against. I always say, like, you can take a horse to water, right? You can't make him drink. And I know it's not my quote and it's old and it's cliche, but it is so, so true. I'm like, a lot of my best mates do not read yet, but some of them will like pick up Tyson Fury's book and be like, ah, I'm going to read that. And that's the whole thing of like, read what you love until you love to read. And I say to them, oh, that's sick. How are you finding it? And I'll ask them questions. But all you can do is like show them the benefits. And it's not about saying to them, like, oh, hey, look, this is what I've been doing. This is what I've been learning. How amazing is this? You could learn this too if you read this book. It's just about living through what you're learning, essentially. And I accidentally said this once. I was like, read by example. And I was like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. And then people attached to it. But it is very true. You can only ever lead by example and you read by example. You never, like, you can't push people into things. You can't pull people kicking and screaming. You just have to show them that there are benefits there and they can reap those benefits as well if they just put in a tiny bit of effort.
That Tyson Fury example is an interesting one to hark back to, because most, and I'm going to be stereotypical here, most guys that maybe refuse to read, one of the best ways that I think we can maybe move forward is reading a book, maybe an autobiography or a story about somebody that they admire. And it's that whole Naval Ravikant quote that you've given. Getting them to start reading that and seeing the benefits of it from that can be a really fast way for them to, I don't know, snowball effect into reading other areas or other books as well.
100%. And you'll sort of notice that the people that you look up to or admire in life, most of them read books. And like, I spoke to Russell Cain the other day, which is mad. And he is so well read, but I didn't think he would be as well read as he is. But he's read all of the classics, all of like his interest is more in classics and novels and stuff like that. But I was so impressed by just how much he read. And like, who do people look up to the most? Like, there's, just take Tyson Fury, for example. Like, he probably does read. I spoke to Nathaniel Wood, like a fighter in the UFC. There'll be loads of young kids that think he's really, really cool. He doesn't even like reading, but he reads for half an hour a day.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I see the value in it. I know what this will do for me. I'm just going to do it, even if I hate it.
And I'm sure at points Nathaniel reads stuff that he likes and he gets a benefit from. And he's just grooving that habit until it becomes something that he maybe does love, or maybe he finds a particular genre that lights his fire in a way that nothing else does.
Yeah. And like, genres are such a weird thing. It's like, I have read books that are like autobiographies of 30-year-old women who like spent their 20s in Camden getting pissed. And I've really enjoyed reading those books, like Everything I Know About Love by Dolly Alderton. I recommend that to everyone because I think it's especially important nowadays for, well, any days, for guys to understand what girls our age go through when, like, they have periods. I'm never going to have a period. How do I understand about that? Okay, I'll read about it. Like, I don't have to read too much about it, but I can try and understand. So it just increases your compassion levels. And increased compassion will directly correlate with how good your life is, I think.
Yeah, I can see from everything that you speak about, Ed, that you take a lot from reading, but also you're now very intentional with what you read based on some of the improvements. Now, I'm sure that you read books that don't give you something directly applicable, and that's fine, but a lot of what you're choosing, and it's really interesting you've picked there like an autobiography, like a 30-year-old woman, so you can better understand females our age so that you can have compassion and live a better life around them and with them. I think that's really, really interesting when people are maybe making choices about the books that they read, because again, I've said there about the bias where maybe I would read, if I was trying to get like a friend into it, I'd maybe give them like the autobiography of like a rugby player or a football player that they really admire. And that's great because they connect with them. But if we can get them further down the line and get them to read something that is of somebody who's completely different, totally different learning experiences, totally different life experience, and then we can take that forward, then maybe we do have a more connected world as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I think people are so concerned with their echo chambers, right? They are so concerned with their friends. And I read his book, Rebel Ideas by Matthew Syed. He's like a writer for the Times or someone like that. It's a great book. And he talks about the spectrum, like the taking intelligence and saying it's like a rectangle. Like, you will take up a certain amount of space in there as a circle. All of your friends will be very closely sort of linked with that circle in your part of the rectangle, because same age, same class, same upbringing, most likely same race, if that's just kind of like how it is. And when you expand like what you're reading or who you're speaking to, you get to access all the different areas of intelligence you've never sort of encountered before, which that kind of helped me break through from it. And there's a story in there about a guy who was, he was one of the leaders in the KKK, and he was giving speeches at like white power marches at 14. His name is like Derek Black or something ironic like that. And when he went to university, this Jewish guy just invited him to Shabbat, which is like Friday night dinner. He knew who he was. He knew what he did and he knew his values. But he also thought, he's been in an echo chamber all his life. Like, his dad was a leader in it. He's, his mum was a big supporter of the KKK. So he's like, I'm going to give this guy a chance. So we just invited him to dinner, invited him to dinner, invited him to dinner. Nowadays, that guy's one of the leaders in like anti-racism, like speeches and stuff like that. People employ him to come and chat about it because he's made a transition through someone giving him a chance and someone just trying to understand him. So that's why it's important just to break free of your echo chambers, because you never know how much it can transform your life.
What books in particular have you read that have really challenged you then, Ed, that have, you've been like, oh God, I need to reassess my thought process?
I think that's a good question. And obviously I read a lot. I'll tell you what, a recent one, Chasing the Scream by Johan Hari. It's about addiction. And it's completely changed the way that I look at addicts. And I think it's very natural for people to walk down the street, see a homeless person, oh, fuck, that's annoying. Just, please don't ask me for money. Please don't, oh, you're just going to spend it on drugs. And there's no compassion there. Reading Chasing the Scream completely opened my mind up to how, like, the war on drugs is essentially something that stemmed from racism in the 1920s around, like, the Prohibition era in America. And essentially, people don't choose to be addicts. It comes from a loss of connection. And that led on to his second book, Lost Connections, which is brilliant. I'd recommend that to anyone. And then like Everything I Know About Love by Dolly Alderton, How to Fail. That just opened me up a little bit to the life of a female. And I was like, okay, this is what my sister goes through, or this is what my friends go through. And that would be really annoying. And I'd find that really challenging to have to deal with that every single day of my life. And it just opened my mind up to that. And I think it's definitely helped. Like, a lot of my friends are girls and I just feel a little bit more aware. I think self-awareness is my goal, essentially, with reading, is to just expand what I know so I can pick what I think is true and be a more sort of well-rounded human, as opposed to like, oh, I'm reading for this particular reason. I just want to be a well-rounded person.
Yeah, two really interesting books to call out there, Ed, and both of which, like you say, challenging maybe preconceived ideas that we have and enabling you to, like you say, build compassion with maybe people that you would have passed judgment on before. And I think we're all guilty of, like you say, passing judgment if somebody's begging for money and you're worried about, well, if I do give him a quid, he's going to put that towards something that's not going to do him any good. Like, how do I kind of help him more so, I suppose? And then equally from the female perspective, like you say, you and I are never going to experience a period, so how could we possibly understand what that time of the month is like for females?
Or get catcalled.
I mean, that's another one. Like, just who in the right mind whistles out a van and thinks that's going to lead to what you probably ultimately want, which is some sort of sexual encounter? It's just
loads of people. That's a crazy thing.
They haven't been reading enough books, have they, in terms of getting a level of self-awareness? I'm really keen to ask you about the three P's in terms of how that relates to reading. One of those is Pomodoro. Is that the approach that you always take? And obviously you can tell the listeners a little bit of what that is.
I don't really. I think 25 minutes is my limit of concentration for the most part, unless I'm reading a novel and it flows a little bit easier. So I suppose naturally I kind of do the Pomodoro. But I think for people that are studying, that's when it's really, really useful. And I try to keep reading as little like studying as possible. But essentially the idea in Pomodoro would be 25 minutes of reading, 5 minute, 10 minute break to just step away from the book. Don't make notes, just change where your brain is, move it, chat to friends about something different, look at memes, literally do anything to get your mind off of what you were just doing and then go back to it. So that'd be the Pomodoro. I'm going to be so honest, you're going to have to remind me of the other two P's.
Yeah, no, I've got them on front of me, don't worry.
Good.
So, I actually took notes listening to your podcast, and I do that when I listen to really good podcasts. So obviously there's an ego boost for you there, Ed. But the one of the other P's was purpose. So it was like you going into that reading session with an idea. So one of the ways that you probably illustrated that and how you've spoken, which is always valuable when you hear somebody talk about methods and then it all comes through in their speech, you're kind of like, yeah, this guy's for real. You are speaking there about reading, for example, Chasing the Scream, to challenge your perspective on people who have addiction. Your purpose going into that reading session, if you want to call it that, was I'm going to open my mind to other areas.
Yeah, and that's a key thing to do. And anyone that wants to kind of remember a little bit more about what they read, before you pick up a book, look at it and like imagine you had the author in front of you and be like, right, what questions would I ask them? Like, you're asking the book a question, you write down the question, and then you read to find that answer. And that's what your purpose is. Like Psychology of Money, you mentioned that you listened to that episode. I hate books about money. Used to hate books about money. I read that book. And the reason I read that book is because I'm like, I hate money, so I don't understand it that much. How am I going to understand it that much? Psychology, money. I thought it was going to be a lot more intense than it was, if I'm honest. And it was a brilliant book. But I was reading that because I was like, I need to understand it. And like the questions I was asking is like, what is the right thing to do? What is right? Like, should I be doing X, Y, or Z with my money? And the answer is like, no, you should do what feels good for you and what works for you. But the general idea is that you should probably get like a Fundsmith account or something and stick 400 quid a month in until you're a millionaire at 50.
Yeah, exactly that. So you had a purpose reading that book from the very start to educate yourself on what that meant and maybe challenge preconceived notions that maybe people around you were saying or you had within your own head. So that's the kind of the second P that I had. And then the last one was procrastination, Ed, which I think we all suffer from as well. How do you, I suppose you've spoken about habit formation there. Are there any other ways that you tackle procrastinating when it comes to reading?
I will, if I catch myself procrastinating, which happens often, I'll literally be like 3, 2, 1, and then I'll just move. Because the movement that you don't need to be motivated. I think motivation isn't real. That could be controversial, but essentially it's about your discipline. And if you catch yourself procrastinating, give yourself that countdown and just move. And then all of a sudden you're moving and it's a lot easier to start moving a bit quicker. But it's so easy to start procrastinating.
Yeah. And I know that you have something on like a reminder in your calendar about, kind of motivating you, and I know we're talking about that motivation term there, to keep going with the podcast. Can you share that with the listeners what that is?
Yeah, so I use notifications in terms of like emails. I'll get an email through with those notifications I put on Instagram today, and it will come through up on my phone as like an event. So the events obviously will come through as a reminder anyway, even if you've got notifications off. I, at some point last year, maybe a couple months into doing the podcast, I hardly any downloads, something like that. I was like, this is a good idea. And I sat myself, I was like, it must be. I'm like, I know it is. That's why I started it. But you naturally doubt creeps in often for people. So I was like, you know what? I've used this in therapy before for different stories that I've told myself in terms of anxiety, depression, different stories that I said about my past. I was like, I'm just going to use this to then give myself a little lift every week. So on a Friday, 7 a.m, I just get an event. The podcast is a fucking good idea. Just so every Friday, I'm like, yeah, do you know what? It is. Thanks, Ed, in June last year.
I find that so refreshing and interesting to learn that. And it's that utilization, I think you were saying this, of when you were feeling like, come on, Ed, this podcast is something you need to commit to. Utilize that period where your energy is in that place and leave reminders for future Ed when he's maybe not feeling that way on a Friday afternoon in a cold November when he's thinking, this podcast, it's taken a lot of my time. Like, I'm like, that last week's episode got half the downloads of the week before. Did I do something wrong? Did I not do this right? Maybe I should just not record this week and release two episodes. Yeah. Whereas the energy you had in June, where you're thinking, right, we're 2 months in, 3 months in, whatever it was, keep going. This is the right path. Let's keep refreshing that, even on those days when I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah. And I do it often. I write notes to myself all the time, like in my journal, like every like 30, 40 pages in my journal, I'm like, right, turn back. And I just write that at the bottom as soon as I get a journal. So I'm like, go back and have a look at what you were thinking on that day. And I'm like, oh, cool. I was pretty confident that day. Or, oh, I was feeling pretty sad that day. Why? Okay, well, I'm not going to do that today. Just like a bit of reflecting. Like, I'm not massive on reflecting, but I'll do it in very short, sharp doses.
Yeah, purposeful doses as well, Ed, rather than like just for the sake of it. What do you use to journal, and is it a daily task?
I've switched it up recently because I work with whatever issue I've got at the moment, and for me that was organization. So I bought like a journal off of Amazon called like a Zello journal, for planning my week and planning things that I needed to do and making sure I was getting them done. In terms of my journaling now, I no longer write down like what I'm grateful for every day, because I feel like I'm at a space where I will wake up and I will feel it. And every maybe 2 days, I'll write in my journal as if like it's like a dear diary kind of thing. Like, oh, like I've been doing this the last couple of days. This is how I've been feeling. I've had like good energy when I was doing this, and my energy wasn't so good when I was doing that. But it's taken me a while to get there. And the reason that I started doing that was when I read Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey, because I was like, this guy's journal is like all over the place, and it's not as structured as people would sort of have you doing like the 6 minute diary and stuff like that, which I did start with. Because it's difficult to think of things that you're grateful for when you first start. But yeah, I stopped writing down what I was grateful for probably early part of this year. I just sort of go with whatever I'm feeling with at the time. Like the other day, I was writing about my life because I felt pretty good. One thing about me, and I don't know if this is going to turn people off me, but like, I smoke weed pretty much every evening. Like it's my choice, you know, my body, my life. And I was writing in my journal the other day, I was like, oh, like I'm just in a recent relationship. And that's a big thing for me, because that's what led to a lot of my depression stuff, was a broken relationship. Very common story. Yeah. I was writing about how the relationship was and how the podcast was going. And I was like, and lol, I literally have a 500-pound surfboard. So I was like, 6 years ago, I'd have thought that was so cool. Yeah. I was like, why don't I recognize that now?
Yeah, you're almost lost within the day-to-day, and particularly on the trajectory that you've been on in the last year with podcast growth and lifestyle growth and changes in that space. It's maybe easy to get lost in like chasing the next, I don't know, 10,000 download episode or whatever it is that you're going after. Whereas like you say, 6 years ago, Ed would have been like, what? I'm going to have a 500-pound surfboard. Like, that's so legit. Or I'm going to manage my life on a phone in terms of earning my living. No chance. Like almost. Yeah. That. So it's really interesting that you've got a kind of more free flowing approach to your journaling. And I guess you can tell from my personality type, from our conversation, I quite like structure and I really benefit from a 6 minute diary. That's just who I am. But I think in the longer term, particularly the kind of second or third 6 minute diary you get, which is kind of an evolution, there's a more free-flowing section each month and each week. And I'm starting to get, and this sounds really silly, I'm getting better at writing in there without the prompts. And
no, that's legit, man. Like it takes practice. It's like anything, writing about how you're feeling, what you're doing. It doesn't come naturally for people, because if someone has a diary in school, they're a loser.
Yeah.
It's in films and it trickles down into society.
Yeah, completely agree. You mentioned the T word there, Ed, therapy, and I know that's something that you're a massive advocate of. And I'd be really interested in top level, what are some of the areas of self-improvement that you've found within therapy? And obviously, I think it's incredibly brave and rewarding of you to affiliate with a partner in that space, in terms of the sponsor of your podcast. And yet again, it's just that normalizing of something which can genuinely help people. I think it's so important that people like you are speaking about.
Yeah, I think for me, like I had to be pushed to go to therapy a couple of years ago. Like I sat in my garden crying to my ex-girlfriend about how much I hate my work, how much I hate my life, and probably how much I hated her. No, I didn't really. But like I was super upset and she's like, why don't you like think about speaking to someone? I was like, no, I couldn't do that. I was like, look at me, I cry when I speak to people. I can't do that in front of other people. And she's like, who do you think cares when you cry? And I was like, oh, no one. No one actually cares. Like they feel compassion towards you. They want to help you when they cry because they see that's how strongly you feel about something. And I went to therapy and I was super nervous on the phone when I went through the questionnaire. Hardly spoke to her when I first got into my first session. She tried to make me do mindful eating of a raisin once, and I lied to her for about 3 weeks about doing that. And then after, I think it was probably like the fourth session, I started like properly opening up and really started reaping the benefits of going. And one of the big things that impacted my mental health was like anxiety, but very specific, vivid stories I'd make up about what was going to happen in the future, or a person would do, or a person would say about me. And my therapist was like, oh, that's so interesting. How many times have you been right? And I was like, oh, damn. Oh, if I'm honest, Anna, I don't think you've always been right ever. And that was massive for me. And then, like, naming stories, like, a big thing for me was that I was a failure. So I dropped out of school. I went in the Marines, kept getting injured. I then went and worked in car sales, left that, tried to do forex trading. Like there's so many different things that I've dropped off a ledge of something I thought I wanted to do. And I would legitimately like look people in the eyes that cared about them, like, yeah, no, I am a failure. And I truly believed it until I like named the story, until I started setting reminders on my phone that were like, I'm a failure. And that seems pretty harsh to have that come through to you, but you're like, ah, no, you're not. It almost becomes playful. And more recently, I went to, because I hadn't seen her in real life for a while. I'd just been on Zoom and I was like ready to go and just brag almost about like how things were and how I was emotionally. After about 20 minutes of me just chatting out my arse, she goes, oh, so are you proud of yourself? And I was like, pardon, just who? Am I what of myself? And it wasn't something I'd really acknowledged, was like if I was genuinely proud of what I was doing. And I thought, I don't like to acknowledge it because I wouldn't want to come across as arrogant, but that's different than pride and being like knowing that you're doing good work. You know, like how often do you, like with your podcast, sit back and be like, I'm pretty proud of what I've built.
Good question. Occasionally when, and this is really bad, when the metrics reflect it or when the messages reflect it. And I think that's the beauty of podcast versus Instagram ed. You get a lot more messages about, like, you could get a message like 3 weeks later. And when we release this, in 6 months' time, guaranteed you'll get a follow from somebody that's listened to this episode and be like, Ed, I loved when you said that. So I think that element makes you feel proud of what you've built, especially as you get past kind of like 40, 50 episodes into the 60s and 70s, you're like, I actually am proud that I've kept up the consistency of these regular uploads.
Yeah, man.
So I certainly think that's an important part. One of the things that you mentioned there about that story of telling yourself that you were a failure is so interesting because there was elements of what happened within your life that was reinforcing that story, but also it was maybe self-perpetuating because you were going into the Forex venture, for example, you were going into the car sales venture with, I failed at X and Y previously, I'm going to fail at this, which is
Oh no, I
self-fulfilling.
no. So I actually have this weird self-belief that anything that I think I'm going to do, there's no stopping me. Like even as low as I was when I first started the podcast, I was like, I know it's going to be big at some point. Like it's not there yet, but like I know at some point I'll be getting 1 million downloads a week. And I don't know why. I can't tell you why. But I've always had this just like belief that I will do something that will make myself proud. But I think what it was is that I was never fulfilling that. And that's why when she asked me if I was proud, I was like, oh. Nah, not yet, not yet. But that's a, you kind of have to take stock of where you are. But I don't necessarily think at the time, like I headed into any of those things thinking, oh, what if I fail? I've always been quite of a risk taker.
That's interesting. You would almost not expect that, but equally, when it doesn't come true, maybe it's even harder to take, and it maybe reinforces that failure message because you're like, you've gone in with such kind of self-assurance and it's fallen flat and you're like, shit, maybe I'm actually a failure in this space.
Mate, it sucks.
it is incredible though. And what's the service that you work with, Ed, where people can get online support? How does that all work?
Yeah, so I work with BetterHelp. So they're a United States-based company because there's nothing like that in the UK as of yet. But when there is something in the UK, I'll be chatting to them straight away. But it's essentially a service that just makes therapy more accessible for people because therapy sessions in person are really hard to fit around work because you have to drive to somewhere and everyone wants that 5:30, 6 o'clock appointment. Everyone wants that morning appointment. And it makes it very difficult. That's kind of a good thing about being based in the States because like you can get an 8 p.m. appointment and you're just doing it from your room. But you're in touch with a therapist in about 48 hours, which is, you wouldn't get that in the UK, especially if you went through the NHS. We all know what the NHS are like in terms of being able to help people in good time through no fault of their own apart from funding. But I mean, blame the Tories. won't get into that. The service is essentially, you can email them if you hate speaking on camera. You can call them if you hate speaking on camera. You can speak on camera if you like speaking on camera. There's so many different ways in which you can communicate. And another really helpful thing is they have like webinars. It's like, right, here's how to make a couple work there, like webinar. And I feel so proud that like I can see how many people I've got to go to therapy. That's what I genuinely feel proud for probably the most, is that I know there are hundreds of people out there that have listened to what I've said and either paid for their brother to go to therapy or gone themselves. And it's like 40 quid a week. You pay it on a monthly basis. Like, I mean, feel free to cut this out. I know I'm not doing an ad on your podcast.
Ed, I wanted to ask you this question for this.
Yeah. Year. Okay. All right. Sick. Yeah. For 160 quid a month that people would easily spend on PTs, you can sort your brain out, which will have a far longer lasting effect than doing 200 burpees.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it.
Yeah. I've had friends that have gotten their best physical shape, and sometimes that can translate through the habits that you've got to be in good mental shape. But equally, I know the people that have gotten tremendous physical shape, like you say, and invest a lot of money in personal training and whatnot. But you can look in the mirror and think, oh, I'm ripped and I'm handsome. That's great. But sometimes there's something going on inside your head that's going to cause you problems well beyond that. So I do think it's important that on a podcast where we speak a lot about self-development and building a better body and better mind, the mind part, there's tools for that as well. There's coaching for your mind in the same way that you can get a coach to get you ripped for Ibiza whenever that opens up.
Yeah, exactly. It means you don't have to not drink water and do Clen.
Exactly that, Ed. And I think the last thing that I'd love to finish with you on is some really actionable takeaways in terms of three books that you think people who are moving towards peak performance with mind and body, career and business would take a lot from. And I would be surprised if there's not a fiction one in there, because you're obviously not just going to advocate self-development ones.
This book is told as a story, and this will be my fiction one. It's called The Go-Giver by Bob Berg, and it'll just instill an attitude of wanting to give to the world more than what you take. And I think as much as we all probably think we give a lot out, not to the extent that could actually be really helpful for us and those around them. So that one I read recently, it's super short. It's like 130 pages, real quick read. So that can be a massively like life-changing book for people if they take on those principles. Two people I actually know in the podcasting space rang me up with issues about like their work. And I was like, all right, here are the five principles from this book. Both of them within an hour were like, cool, I'll just quit my job. I'm going to focus more on helping people on a broader scale.
Wow.
So like, it's powerful. So if you don't want to quit your job, maybe don't do that. Or if you want to like use it to spur on yourself in your job, like it's so easily applicable. Like in the book, he's a salesman and he passes off a sale to a competitor. And it's just a strange attitude. It's kind of counterintuitive, and people might see it as that way, but it's a very helpful book. Two other books. See, I find this so hard.
I put you on the spot. Yeah. I know I have it.
You're going to deliver for me.
You're going to deliver. I know you are.
I want people to read Surrounded by Idiots. It's a book about personality types, and it will just help you, no matter what line of work you're in, to kind of gauge what other people are like. So me and you are very different in terms of, like, you like structure. I don't like structure. This book will tell you how to understand that, and how, if you were trying to sell something to me, how you could do that without trying to impress me with statistics. And it's brilliant. And I wish that I was read it when I was working in sales, because I'd have earned loads more money. And finally would be The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris.
Okay.
This book is, I think, essential reading, and not just for yourself. Like, if you're quite a jolly, happy person, that's brilliant. And I love that for people. But there are going to be people in your life that aren't. And when you read The Happiness Trap, you're given tools to help diffuse anxiety, to help separate from your thoughts of sadness, and to really accept the fact that life is not always going to be this jolly place to live, and your mind will play tricks on you. So The Happiness Trap, I think people should read, certainly for themselves if they feel sad or anxious at any stage, but also just read for all the people around them as well, because then you're armed with the tools. So when your friend says, hey, I've been really feeling anxious about this, you're like, oh, why don't you try this technique I learned? It's called diffusion. And then you just explain that to them.
Yeah, three incredible recommendations there, Ed. And interestingly, those last two in particular relate to understanding those around you better in order to have more compassion, more self-awareness, which, again, it relates back to, even though you weren't, like, well-versed in the three Ps, one of your Ps is purpose. So you're reading for a specific purpose to become the kind of person that you want to be. And I would kick myself if I didn't ask you, do you take notes on these books? Do you write them? Do you type them? What's your process for retention?
So I have a very weirdly chilled out approach to this, right? And because I read so many books, mate. I don't try to remember everything I read. The attitude that I set at the start is that I will never remember someone's life work that they've put into a book over 300 pages. So I'm like, if I can take five principles from a book, and I don't have to be able to say, like, if you ask me the name of a book and I give you those five principles, but they'll be somewhere within the way that I live. That's what I'm aiming for. If it's just one principle, it's still enough. Yeah. The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt was one of the first books, like, intense books I read on social psychology. And I can't remember half of what's in that book, but I remember, like, one thing from the first chapter, and it changed the way that I think about people around the world. So it's worth it.
Yeah, that's incredibly interesting, isn't it? Like, you don't necessarily need to have, like, screeds written down, scribbled at the back of every chapter or in your notes on your iPhone. But if you take something that's impactful, then that's enough.
Yeah, because I noticed I don't look at them. If I take notes, I never look at it. If I highlight, I don't even look at it. So at the end of a chapter, if I really want to learn what's in the book, I'll just try and summarize it a little bit. If I'm using it for a podcast, like, I'll read the book first and I'll try and write down what I remember, get your active recall up, because active recall is great for remembering what you read. And then the bits that I still need to find, like, I'll go and find them again in the text. Even if I haven't highlighted them, it's easy enough to go and look at the names of the chapters and kind of remember where stuff was. So yeah, I'm not massive on, like, highlighting loads of stuff and making notes, but it really works for some other people. So I'm not against it, apart from people that just sit there and highlight pretty much 50% of the book. I'm like, that's just pointless. You're never going to be able to see what's the important bit. And it's like the old saying, oh, if you're holding a hammer, all you're going to see is nails. So, like, if you're holding a highlighter, all you're going to see is good quotes. Yeah. So put your highlighter away from you as well.
Yeah, great advice there, Ed. And I think one of the best ways for us to learn and reinforce something we've learned is to teach on to others. And I suspect you get a lot of that from maybe reviewing a book for the podcast or talking about your key learnings. You are teaching that on to the thousands of people that are listening, maybe millions soon, I'm hoping for you anyway. And they they learn from you and you reinforce the fact that, for example, in the psychology of money, you learn more about you should invest where you actually really care rather than just following a cookie cutter template. Yeah. And you were able to recite that rather than if you'd maybe written that down and never looked at it again for weeks, months, you would never have retained.
I've got an idea for you, right? And this is what I did before I started the podcast, before I ever even thought of the podcast, is when I was reading books initially, I went to my manager in my sales place and I was like, hey, can I borrow the team for half an hour? I've got a presentation I want to do. And they're like, what? And I was like, I've just read this book and this is going to make the team better. And I've got some stuff to tell them. And it was Atomic Habits. And I went through the 1% method and I went through all of these methods, created a presentation. Obviously, I was trying to lick ass a little bit at work. And if you've just started a new job, it might be a good idea to give that a go. But that's how you learn. So I was teaching people about books before I ever even considered the podcast, because that's kind of the way that works for me. And I think anyone that's in a workplace that does want to kind of stand out is doing stuff like that, is taking the initiative and kind of getting yourself noticed whilst also helping your learning.
Yeah, it fills up everyone's cup because it helps you learn better and it helps those around you learn and take on something new. And yeah, I absolutely love that as a kind of a parting piece of advice from the wise Ed Cunningham. Ed, thank you so much for joining me. Listeners, I hope you've all enjoyed this. Ed, where should they head towards to learn more?
So it's onlyfans.com. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, it's Instagram, a need to read with the number 2 and not the word, and everything is on there, links for the podcast. No links for OnlyFans, only because I'm too much for pussy.
Yeah, you'll get there one day and you'll really be making bank. But that'll be like in the show notes below. I'm sure you guys have enjoyed this. So please take the opportunity to share it with a friend that maybe needs to read more, or maybe another avid reader of yours that maybe will resonate hard with this one. And I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.